Hi, everyone. My name is Josh Nason, and this is Josh Nason's Punch-Out here on WrestlingObserver.com. Joining me for the first time in about a year, the guys from The Lapsed Fan, Jack Encarnacio and JP Saro, joining me for almost, an hour and a half to talk all about, of course, The Lapsed Fan, why they didn't do a WrestleMania show this year, but more importantly, they're here to talk about Dark Side of the Ring Unheard. That's right. The second year they've been doing this podcast series, the official companion series to Dark Side of the Ring, which starts on, I believe, March 25th, if I have that right. However, the podcast debuts on Wednesday, March 19th, and you learn all about that, why it's not a apples-to-apples comparison, I guess you could say, or companion, rather, to the series. So we talk all about this season of Dark Side of the Ring, the whole process, the topics of the podcast and who they're talking about every single week and all kinds of other stuff as well. I should mention, this was recorded on St. Patrick's Day, Monday, March 17th. And in this, this was recorded before John Cena and his first appearance post-heel turn. And also before the announcement on Tuesday that WrestleMania or WWE is going to be hosting a roast of WrestleMania after a show with Tony Hinchcliffe. I bring those up because those topics are actually talked about on the show, one related to the Lapsed Fan WrestleMania events, and the other, of course, Jack and JP's thoughts on what they would have liked to see with John Cena and what they would have not liked to see, put it that way. We'll talk more about that. That'll make more sense in a minute. So let's get right to it. Almost an hour and a half, a short episode by TLF standards. But the chairmen are here, JP and Jack. A brand new edition of Josh Nason's Punch-Out talking about The Lapsed Fan, Dark Side of the Ring Unheard, everything you'd want to know, and then some. We're going deep. We're going dark. It's going to be titillating. Enjoy. Well, spring, as always, brings traditions, brings snow melting, the crack of the bat, spring training, baseball season about to begin, and my guest at this time coming on this show to plug something. Here we are again. You know their voices from The Lapsed Fan, of course, and however, you also probably know their voices. If not, you will now. You will know that they are on the Dark Side of the Ring podcast series, which is called Unheard. Of course, I had my notes right here. Yes, Dark Side of the Ring Unheard, a deep dive podcast series into the topics covered on every single episode. Of course, the brand new season begins in just a week's time, give or take, March 25th, and the guys will be back. Of course, I'm talking about from the Lapsed Fan, from your hearts, from your souls, JP Encarnacio and JP Saro. Hi, guys. Welcome back.
I like that last name, JP. It's great to be back, man. Yeah, it is becoming a tradition, you know, and to your listeners, I'd say don't be mad that we got something going on every spring.
That's right. Yeah. Hey, you know what? We can't help it. We can't help it if we're loved.
We wouldn't be here if opportunities weren't falling out of the sky like so many meteorites.
Did I mispronounce the last name? Now.
No, you gave both of us my convoluted. Well, you said JP Encarnacio, which is actually fascinating to think about.
Why am I do that now? I must be a sign of just old age. I was reading this book to my daughter, and I'm like combining names, and she's like, "Dad," I'm like, "Oh shit, sorry." So yes, Jack Encarnacio and JP Saro. I get very nervous around you guys, sweating. You know, I worked on that intro all night. You know what I mean? And finally, just kind of put it out there.
Sometimes the more prep, the worse it can be.
Exactly. Hey, I get nervous being around us too. It happens. I don't know what's going to come out of my mouth.
Yeah. You have a lot of company in that regard, Josh. A lot of folks clam up when they approach the throne.
Exactly.
They start losing their minds.
Well, I'm glad what a perfect segue. Because last time you guys were on, which is last April, you were plugging the Bozo's Brunch for WrestleMania weekend in Philadelphia, Pennsylvania. And however, that's not happening this year. No WrestleMania, no boys heading to Las Vegas. What was the decision behind that for the fans that are curious and asking about? And talk to us about that first before we get into it.
Sure. I think it was really just Vegas being kind of like a place that we've exhausted personally. You know, like We were excited to go to Minneapolis when that was the you know, the expected announcement before they moved SummerSlam there, because that's a place with some wrestling heritage. It's a place we haven't done a live show before. Vegas we did for the second StarCast, and it's I don't know, it just seemed like a it would be very unlikely that it would be like a profitable thing, you know, because it's so expensive out there, and it's Easter Sunday, for God's sakes. Not to say we're like, you know, religious people, but it I don't know, JP, that all that combined to be like, you know what, like, we're not gonna regret not going.
I agree. I mean, again, the main thing, we, you know, we've kind of feel, even though it was years ago, we kind of feel like we just were there. Honestly, I still feel like that way. And I'm like, you know, Vegas, like, I don't need to go. And, you know, yeah, I'm not, listen, I'm not going to be sitting by the cave waiting for the boulder to roll over and see Jesus again. But, you know, it's Easter Sunday. It's a family tradition. So, like, you know, we sing. So I was like, it's not Christmas, but like it's kind of one of those weird holidays where I'd get in trouble with the family.
And if you're hesitating, if you're on the fence.
If I was in Sin City of all places on Easter.
And the Allegiant Stadium doesn't look like a big egg for what it's worth, but you know, given all the factors, that's a nice tipping point. Like, and it's Easter, like they need to calm down over there.
Well, so we not talk after the last one. How did things go? How was the it was your second, if I remember, your second live show or the second kind of thing.
WrestleMania live show.
How did it go in terms of, like, we had talked about kind of on the last time we talked about how the last one went, how this one go, given your expertise level going into it.
I think it went very well. It was great to see so many of our tried and true listeners come out and bring people that weren't familiar to, who were cackling along, and lapsed Vince laid down the prophecy. You know, he.
He's never wrong. That's the scary thing. He's never wrong. I wish I could be, you know, the thing is, I wish I could be in the same room as him sometime. It just seems to time that we just can't ever connect in that way.
Paths don't cross,
Want to be, I know maybe women have said that same sentence, but please continue.
Come on, ref, get in there. But there was no shortage, you know. He laid out like why the NDAs are for the benefit of the women and not his benefit, which was nice of him to do. He talked about how, you know, the reason those NDAs benefit the victims, the supposed victims, as he would say, is because, you know, the only thing that hurts worse than abuse is finding out that people do not care that you were abused. And that is the situation these women would put themselves in without these NDAs. This is what lapsed Vince had to say. And if you think that's too far afield from the thoughts that might actually sit in the former chairman's mind, then you haven't been paying attention over 10 years here as we try to channel the inner monologue of one Vince. And we're watching closely to see what happens next, because lapsed Vince check-ins have become sort of like a special event and not something you hear every week on the pod.
You got to make the people wait for it.
Absolutely. Especially in that kind of a setting. And the kind of setting is very, you know, it's funny. It's one of the only times I've done a bunch of stage work in the past and stuff, and it's probably one of the only times I get nervous actually being on stage and getting ready to perform. I don't know what it is about that. I'm sure part of it has to do with me, you know, more or less being myself when we go out on the stage. But I'll tell you, it's a it's always amazing, and I'm always glad we do it. But it's funny to me how, like, that those moments really make me nervous, and I've done way more crazier, stupid things on a stage in front of hundreds of people before.
Here's a little inside baseball, Josh. He might have been nervous because when he woke up that morning, he could not talk. He had no voice.
That's true. I forgot about that.
What happened?
I had what's it called? The thing in the
Laryngitis?
No, I had an enlarged
Similar.
that hangs in the mouth, in the back of
The uvula or whatever it is?
the uvula. Yes. So I woke up with an enlarged uvula, and it was like, it was where this came from, I don't know, but it was, you know, it was like resting like right on the back of my tongue, and so I couldn't speak normally. And actually, this is like, God, I completely forgot about this. We had to rewrite the whole show on the fly because we had I couldn't speak normally at the time. Ended up getting some meds and use water and stuff to kind of calm down the swelling. But
Miraculously, by the time we took the stage, he could pretty much do everything, but we had no expectation of that going to the venue.
And so we kind of did everything so that it was mostly lapsed Vince, because that was the only voice I could do. Like, for some reason, I could do that voice.
I think we know why.
I couldn't speak. Yeah, I do know why. I know why. Listen, I'm sure I was cursed, so it's the only voice that is in that invulnerable to any kind of sickness, symptom, whatever. So
that's the real answer, Josh. The reason we're not doing another live show is because we're conspiratorial and we worry that WWE somehow gimmicked the filtration in our hotel room so that when he woke up Sunday morning, he couldn't speak.
That might be buried in the next Observer. I can't confirm or deny that, but we'll see.
Yeah, people are saying.
People are saying.
That's that may have been what happened. But yeah, you know, we're scheming around doing some other things live for the fans because we do enjoy it so much. Yeah. But that was that felt like an appropriate, like, okay, let's let this sit for a little while. And further to the point, I think it was kind of like anonymously sourced, but it was passed around. The guy we work with to put these shows together sent it to us. It looks like they're even, WWE's even scheming on doing a post Night 2 comedy roast. I wonder where they got that idea, by the way.
Yeah, right.
So it's like that would have been a whole other aggravation. Like, we would have done all this work and try to move to, and then they do something that, you know, totally usurps it. So we're trying to be a little more strategic about that. You know, we're happy to let everyone copy us after we've exited the room, but not while we're still in the room.
Yeah. Yeah. There has been a rumor that's been flowing around. I haven't seen anyone be able to confirm it yet, but they're thinking like Tony Hinchcliffe is going to do some sort of thing.
That's what I'm talking about.
Yeah. Yeah. Very strange. Very strange. So do you think is WrestleMania next year is in New Orleans, if I remember right? Is that you guys thinking about that or not sure yet?
I got to be honest with you. We're looking more closely at SummerSlam and Mini.
Yeah. The idea of going to Minneapolis is really intriguing, just because of the work that we've done in examining AWA stuff and all that. You know, I want to go to Lake Minnetonka. I want to see where the house was. I want to see the whole. You know, I want to see where Shea Vern was, and all that kind of history there is just, again, something we've never really, I've never had any desire nor need to go to Minneapolis.
Yeah, that's it too. There's a little bit of appeal,
but it's like, I, there's no reason for me to go to Minneapolis. I don't have any family there. I don't have any, you know, it's, I've never worked there or anything like that. So it would be nice to have an excuse to go and be part of that history.
All of America, first Nitro. It starts to work.
See, there we go.
I could see you guys doing a bus tour and like a guided tour. Yeah.
That's a good idea.
That makes sense.
We should do that. We should look into that because we do have a lot of connects up there. So people who are very resourceful.
Hosted by Lapsed Vern the whole time.
Exactly. Oh my God.
Among the things he might point out, you know, or where his wife would source her lamb chops that were so noted on the movie The Wrestler. My wife makes great lamb chops, you know. Well, where's the butcher shop, right? We want to see this.
Exactly. These are important things. It's where the food is what matters. Where they had the bar in The Wrestler where they had the big fight. That's still there.
Yeah, with Dusty and and Murdoch.
Stop
by the Registry of Deeds and look up the eminent domain taking of Vern's mansion.
Can you imagine showing up and the people like, what are you doing here? And there's like a line, like 40 people just like
holding it up like the holy scrolls. Like, all right, everybody.
It'd be amazing.
Oh my gosh. The random Thursday. You know, there's like, what is happening right now?
Well, we had to do it when you guys were open.
Well, speaking of the Laps fan. Right now, you are so cranking away, as always, and you are running through. I was fascinated by this, and I'll have to check a few more of these out. You're going through some of the Coliseum classics here, in addition to, of course, the Slammy Awards, which you've covered the last couple episodes. But I was my interest was peaked because you're going through some of the things that, of course, we grew up with when you couldn't find everything on streaming or in a stupid thing like this phone. You had to actually work and try and see these holy grails at your video store or your convenience store that happened to rent wrestling and porn, you know, like those type of things. And so it must be, are these all on the network or do you get these like YouTube or what are we looking at here?
Not all of them are on the network. Not all of them have been available. We've got them from a different various sources. Some we've even I've gotten off of direct video cassettes and had to do a video transfer into a digital file. But a lot of them were on archive.org, sadly. And then I spoke about it and then they were erased. So so they're gone. But I was fortunate enough. I downloaded most of them. They had, because they have a lot of them, specifically one series that they have that is not on the network, and I don't really know why, is the best of WWE series, which is a fascinating tape. All of them, like there are 20 of them that they've made over the course of the years there. And it's it looks into all these different old matches and clips from, I think we've seen as far back as the like late 60s, I think, maybe, and or mid 60s. And it's just a lot of stuff that I don't think even was on the hidden gem section when that was a thing. So it's always, those have been a lot of fun to kind of poke around in.
Yeah. We embarked on a bit of long-term booking and decided a couple of years ago now that while it's not going to be on a predictable cadence, we'll do it whenever it makes sense to pick the ball back up. We're going to do every Coliseum video release ever in order.
Oh, all right. All right. So yeah, Villains of the Squared Circle. I remember renting that several times. It was always fun when you went in and it was something new, because it just seemed like there was always like the same four things, and like, okay, I'll get the WrestleMania 4 double VHS set again, you know, like it was, and you saw something new and it's just like, oh, all right. And it was just the best, the absolute best. Has it scratched the nostalgic itch kind of going back in some of this stuff?
To say the least. I mean, you put your finger on it. It's about what it added to one's life to have to hunt for physical media.
Yeah.
That's gone. Our children won't know that thrill, and that is a loss, and that is a decided check mark in the category of why it used to be better. When we talk about that, we don't just mean wrestling. We mean the way the entertainment business was set up, the way media consumption was achieved, the way things came to market was just so much more enriching and fun to participate in. It wasn't so fleeting like streaming is. I'm going to watch 6 hours of a streaming show the day it comes out, and that's it.
Right.
Appointment viewing, without appointment viewing, the experience of everything, wrestling included, is inferior.
Yeah, the anticipation, right? Everyone knows going to, the Northeast is like Strawberries, and going to get a DVD or CD the first day it came out, or you go to your local rental place to rent movies or whatever. And especially like we had, some of the different chains, and they'd have like, six or so of the brand new things, and you had, there's one left, and you're like, I got it, right? And you didn't have to wait. Just that moment of the moment of seeing it and like, I got it. That's the best.
That's it. Or like the idea that when you go, you don't know if it's going to be there.
Yeah.
You don't know if you're going to be able to rent this one or not. Like it is totally, it's up to the universe to decide what is happening in that. And that's, I didn't really, no one ever does when you're that age. You don't appreciate that how important that is, and how defining that is. And it's, again, like Jack said, you today, everything is at our fingertips, literally at our fingertips. We can watch anything anywhere on our phone. And there is something lost in the fact that everything is so accessible. And
yes,
there's also, honestly, what is one of the key things that I think defines any person? Disappointment. There is no disappointment anymore because I can find it all. Mm-hmm. And so you don't have that feeling of going to the video store or going to a toy store or anything like that, where what you want is not there. And so you can't get it right now. You have to wait. And it hurts to have to wait, but it's important.
It is. It forces you to be resourceful. It forces you to consider, if I don't have exactly what I want, having a nervous breakdown isn't an option, because that will only harm my chances of doing it. That only harm my chances of finding something else that might occupy my interest in the moment. That's because, right. At this particular moment, the universe doesn't particularly care about what I want, and being able to have to grapple with that, I think, builds a kind of character that's important and that's missing. And look, does that mean that we would take the option of taking away on-demand streaming media now that we have it? Not really, but that also doesn't mean we can't reflect back, not just because it's nostalgia, but because it was just a superior way of consuming media. And consuming media is such a huge part of American life. You can still call balls and strikes about what used to be better. Just because it's old doesn't mean the only reason to say it was superior was nostalgia. There's a lot more to it than that.
I used to love waiting for baseball stats on Sunday to see everything that happened during the week. It's like a dispatch, you know, like just waiting.
Waiting. That's what I'm trying to say. Waiting. Right. We don't wait anymore.
Right.
Patience. We want to wait fast. We can't even wait in line at McDonald's. Right. We order ahead of time.
Right.
Why? It's 5 minutes.
It's too slow.
Unbelievable.
I need it now. I need a 5 minutes.
You're going to tell me that doesn't have a lot to do with why we find ourselves where we are in the culture? Come on now.
You don't know what you're talking about. Life is so much better. It's easier. I want to plan ahead so I can get there faster and get someplace else faster.
Yeah.
I don't have time to dilly-dally and wait for something.
Now I can go to two places,
right?
Both of which I don't need to go to. But that's instead of before I only could go to one place I don't need to go to.
Yeah, you've inspired me. I'm going to release this podcast in a year, and I'm just going to build up anticipation for it. And say you, and then have make people wait.
And hey, I think that's what they should do with, one John Cena. That's my opinion. I think they should wait. I think they should wait until WrestleMania. Don't unveil.
Oh, we just laid down some commentary on that. I mean,
oh, you did. Okay, let's hear this.
Well, because it's rare for us to kind of dip our toe in a commentary on the modern scene, because that's just not why we exist. But this one we couldn't help. We were in the car driving back from filming these Unheard episodes, and we were just chopping it up. And what the problem is, when we book something, fantasy book something, very rarely does what they do end up being better. So you know how it goes. You have, when you fantasy book, there's no limitations. Everyone says yes to every suggestion.
Right.
You have the full command of the circumstances, even the ones that are invisible to you. And JP had a stroke of genius, and then the thought start. Exercise began. So why don't you let him know?
Well, I said it kind of half as a joke, but then realized that actually this works, because they haven't shown John Cena. I know they're kind of probably, I don't know if they're doing this intentionally or not, but kind of like when Hogan turned heel, he was not on TV for like a week or two. But I said, with John Cena, it's such a huge difference. It's such a big thing. He shouldn't be on TV at all to WrestleMania. He should be off the whole time.
Yes.
Just not there. And
the first time we see him, he parts the curtain to wrestle Cody.
Yep. I think that would be, and I think that would build intrigue, because I think a huge part of what is fascinating about Cena's heel turn is, what is he going to look like? Yep. What's his personality going to be? In my opinion, he's going to be everything we know of John Cena, like we've seen over the last 20 plus years. It's going to be the opposite.
Jorts, boss? Jorts?
Nope. Nope.
Well, what's he going to wear then?
That was a huge discussion. We don't know what he should wear. Part of me thinks maybe regular tights. Part of me thought maybe long pant, like leggings, like Hogan wore when he turned heel, something like that, kind of Hollywood-esque. I think he should shave his head. I think he should actually look like you, sir. I think he should shave his head and grow a beard. I think that would be a massive detour from what we all know is John Cena and what we think of as John Cena. I would love him to just walk down, just almost looking like wait a minute. Is that him? Is that Cena? Are we sure? Like, just totally different. And I think it would be, and what would make it work is the idea that, he's going to face Cody. So, he's going to be there, but we don't see him at all until then.
Like, all you see is Dwayne speaking on behalf of Cena, saying you're not ready for him yet.
Right. Like they'll, I think they should make announcements like, hey, we're going to see John Cena. John Cena is going to be here. And then he no shows. It's going to be The Rock coming out saying, whoa, 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 Cody, John Cena's not here. And make some excuse for it. And I just think that would be brilliant. And he comes out and, when he wins, he beats Cody at WrestleMania, comes out the next day in one of his classic three-piece suits and just wearing sunglasses, just a total douchebag. And the spinner belt. Bring back the idiotic spinner belt, because it works. It's like everyone hates it, and it would be amazing to have him come back and say, look, I got my belt back. Look, because I'm friends with the boss. He'll do what I want. I'm not going to do what you want.
He talks in monotone. He reads back the tweets, those faux inspirational tweets he's been sending with unsolicited for several years, and he reads them as we receive them, as kind of obnoxious, unasked for advice. And he, because apparently now, you not only have to be a celebrity, you also have to be a motivator in chief. Apparently you can't be a real celebrity anymore unless you somehow try to also motivate people via social media. So there he is, and it's obnoxious. And who's the first person to confront him? Nikki Bella. Nikki Bella hits the ring, and they encourage her to unload every reason that they didn't end up consummating the marriage, why she ran away in the end. And then, Boss has a very controversial suggestion from there.
I do have a very controversial suggestion. I think it would be great if she just unloads on him and nothing is said. Like, he doesn't respond. He just kind of takes it. Again, sunglasses. You don't see his eyes. You don't see how he's feeling. Oof. It's key for this. It's very key.
And he's got the stubble. He's got the beard.
He's got a, full beard. Like, he's just amazing. There. And then she says something like, oh, what do you have to say for yourself? And he's just silent for a few moments. He's just kind of quiet. Nothing happens. And then out of nowhere, grabs her by the back of the head and the hair, like brings her in, microphone drops. He's like pointing at her, how old school way where he's saying something to her, but we can't hear it. No microphone, nothing. He's just yelling at her. And I think to really go over the edge, he's got to go full Jake Roberts and just
paint pressure.
Pressure. Wow.
I mean, just look, you want to book heat?
I don't know if you do that. I don't know how acceptable that is in this. No,
it would not happen.
It wouldn't happen.
I don't think Tico would let it. That's the thing. It's absolutely the Vince era. I mean, who knows? Yeah. But I think the TKO era, they're so. Yeah, it's a public company, But that would certainly be. I mean,
he'd be set for the rest of the year. I mean, people would salivate to see him after he did that.
Him get completely destroyed by everybody, and it would be a money thing.
Yeah. They don't have to go that far, but we laid plenty of pieces in place.
Even he grabbed her by the hair. That's do that, and that would be totally enough. You know, like something like that to just really solidify his jerk status.
And he talks in that droning voice that he used in Total Divas when he was telling her, that when he was like, why did you cook dinner? Like that kind of voice. Like, don't take that comforter out of that ottoman. That belongs in the ottoman. And like the house is like American Psycho neat. What I mean?
Yeah.
It's in there. We've seen it already.
Yeah.
But presenting the best way to do it. Sorry to ruin it for everybody after you hear that.
Yeah. Now he's just going to come out today in shorts and like khaki jorts.
Honestly, like that, if that happens, it's just Tatanka all over again.
Yeah.
Wow. That kind of heel turn.
Yeah. Like, they turned Tatanka heel in 94 and it's like, he's still Native American. Like, how can you boo a Native American? Like, how can you boo someone like that?
That's why he was a babyface in the first place.
Right. Like, he should have been in a suit. He should have been completely, completely different. And it would have been money.
When you make a turn, it's the full turn. Because otherwise, it's just, it's this thing like, The Rock did a tweet the other day about, I love playing this character, the final boss. I'm like, Jesus Christ. I mean, we all know it. But when you say it so blatantly, it's not... Oh, yeah. It's not acting like a movie, like Bryan Cranston saying, I love playing Walter White. It's like, okay, we know there's a difference.
Right.
It's just a different art form. So I think, he's got to fully commit to it. And I think that's the thing is so many people don't want to seem to fully commit to because they're worried about merch sales or all this stuff. Like, if you're going to go for it, you're going to go for it. And hopefully they do.
Yeah, I think in Rock's case, he thought just quickly that he could thread the needle because it was like he can't come back and be a babyface. I think the January 6th Raw told us he wanted to come back and be a babyface. He wanted to come back and be a babyface last year when he was trying to get people, lead the horse to water on the Roman Reigns match. And they totally turned on it and he had to pivot and become a heel. And to his credit, he does. He reads the room and he figures it out. He's going to be a heel for the rest of his life. The Rock has to be a heel because now he's management.
And he's the best. Like, don't forget that. He's one of the absolute greatest heels ever was, especially in the modern age. Like, he's phenomenal and he plays an incredible jerk. Ironically, one of the only guys who really doesn't need to change what they look like when they go between babyface and heel. He's the same.
That's so true.
But with a guy like Cena, where it's like his costume, his attire is so ingrained in what we think of as John Cena, it's just got to be different. It's got to be massively different.
One of the things Lapsed Vince said on stage in the last Philly show was that the fans get sunglasses, Dwayne, and the people with money get eyeglasses, Dwayne.
Yes, that's right.
And that is changing. That is changing because he's taking the dais in these press conferences that wrestling fans are watching right after a wrestling show with the eyeglasses. And I think he's telling himself that he can thread the needle where if he talks about it as a storyline right away, then he's keeping up appearances on the corporate side. Like not allowing people for a second to think that like the character is the man. I think that's why he's doing it more and kind of like, how it ruins the fan experience, be damned. I think that's, he's telling himself, as long as he keeps talking about it as a character, then he can be an evil son of a bitch without compromising his board position. It's like what Bischoff did in 96, really.
Yeah. All right, let's flip to Dark Side of the Ring Unheard. Because when we, last April, so this is the second, this will be the second season you've done this, right?
That's right.
So when did the last season start?
Of Unheard?
Yeah. Was it by the time when we talked last April, was it going or did it not come out yet?
Yeah, it was going, but we were in promote the live show mode back then. Yeah.
Got it.
It started. Okay. Yeah. It runs concurrent with every Dark Side season. Well, the past two Dark Side seasons. So the Wednesday before the Tuesday premiere, the Unheard comes out. Last time it was, you know, audio only on your podcast platforms. And this year we're going to do video as well. Ooh. So it's coming out the Wednesday before the Tuesday release. So it's coming up in just a couple of days. And, you know, it's designed to kind of point forward to the Dark Side episode premiere.
So it's more of a, it's more of a preview. So I was listening to some. So it's more of a preview insight, not a, some of these stories, like, it's not going to spoil anything.
No.
But it's going to just enhance. So when people watch, like, and then it can, okay. But it's probably good either before or after, depending on when people want to listen.
Well,
to
yeah, it. Certainly. The conceit of it is that we are going into, we have access to Darkseid's interview archives. And we were able to see kind of the things that didn't make the cut and read the things that didn't make the cut from the hundreds of interviews they've done over their six seasons in existence. And they've interviewed some of the absolute giants. So Unheard's concept is, it's just that. These are things unheard from people who have sat for Dark Side cameras. Sometimes the relationship to the upcoming Dark Side premiere episode is very clear. We're going to kick off with Mick Foley and some of the things he's told Dark Side cameras over the years that didn't make episodes. And we make a little episode about that. We make a podcast about the things he said and the insights he's provided that didn't really have a home in the episode that he was sitting for the interview for. And that that happens to tie beautifully into the fact that their premiere episode this season is going to be about the Hell in a Cell match. So it makes sense there. Other times it's more like a thematic match. Like we're going to be going into the things Lanny Poffo told them ahead of the Eddie Gilbert episode, because much like Doug Gilbert, the surviving brother of Eddie from a wrestling family, Lanny found himself in a similar position vis-a-vis the Poffo family and kind of being, you know, the lesser known brother, or at least the brother who didn't quite achieve the same heights as, you know, Randy Savage vis-a-vis Lanny and Eddie Gilbert vis-a-vis Doug. So that's the conceit. You know, not every episode is teasing directly the upcoming Dark Side. It sits on its own. It's kind of like a treatment of, you know, here's a little portrait of this wrestler who's talked to Dark Side over the seasons, but what they said didn't find a home on the episodes.
So let's go back then. How did this relationship with Dark Side and Vice first begin?
Well, they needed some help in their third season around some things that we had a lot of expertise, in particular, the Vince McMahon steroid trials. We had just done our series, The Trial of His Life, where we went through every page of the trial transcript, and we just did the most exhaustive dive you're going to find on that trial. It's all in there.
That's for sure.
For sure. Yeah, we felt the exhaustion. they were doing that episode to close out season three. And it's hard. It's a very complex topic. There's a lot of legalese at play. It's hard to say conclusively like why each beat happened through the Zahorian trial all the way to Vince being acquitted. And we had just had that wind at our backs of having done all that work. So they brought us in to kind of consult on how to put the episode together, the materials that they had, that they weren't really sure how to arrange. And so, you know, for the most part, I worked with them to put the whole episode together and rework the draft of the episode they had. So that's what made air. And then going forward, there were a couple of other things that came up that we had expertise around that we helped them with, such as the Bash at the Beach 2000 episode. We had done a very deep dive on that whole thing, that whole saga. And so they had a bunch of cool material, but they needed to arrange it in a way that didn't miss any key subtleties. So we were there for that. We helped a lot with Tales from the Territories, the season they did. Like sourcing cool stories from people who were still around, who, you know, we could use our awareness of the industry to know, like, these guys are good interviews. They're still out there in the circuit. They haven't passed. They're talkative about their times in the territory. So we played a key role there. And so by the time it came around, Dark Side Season 5, they were like, well, we want to do, like, a podcast companion. And we were like talking to him about what it might look like. It's like, man, you know, we know from the work we've done for you that there's a lot of good stuff in those archives.
It was kind of funny too, because we were we were in Brooklyn, actually. We were having lunch with Evan. And, he was kind of talking about some of the funny stories of the interviews and stuff that had happened. And it was, you know, that certainly the idea of having these hundreds of hours of unused interview footage. I mean, that's a wet dream for us, like right there. Like what was said, what was in there? I need that. Like, give me that. And so it was, I don't remember if it was Evan or if it was Jack, but the idea came up of having this podcast as kind of a companion thing to kind of use this unused footage that's literally collecting dust in their archives and bring it to light and
into life. It isn't just playing the clips. It's creating a show around the clips. Yeah.
Yeah, exactly. And so, yeah, so it really spawned from there and it's a lot of fun. I mean, and even doing it this year, it's on video, which adds a whole other element, which is great. It's exhausting, but it's great to be able to see the footage, to actually see the guys, the men and women saying the words and as opposed to just hearing it. It's their facial expressions are just absolutely unbelievable.
So first year was audio only. You can get on your audio device of choice and also on YouTube as well. So that comes out. And what did you learn throughout that first process? Actually, let me get to that in a second. When you said getting the archive, so is it as simple as like a login? Do you actually have to physically go somewhere? How do you get all this stuff? And then how do you schedule the time so you have time to watch all this stuff and give me all that?
Yeah, yeah. Well, they give us, we have a conversation with them about what they think are some good subjects, and they provide us the materials we need to find the gems in there. So we read through it. We don't have to go anywhere. But, it's not like we have unfettered access. It's more like, okay, here's what we're going to focus on. Here are the materials we think would help you do your job. And then I go through them and find out what's money and put it together. And they pull them, and then we look at them, and then we sit down and make a show about them. That's pretty much the process. Yep.
Got it. How long did it take you, like, per episode, generally?
It's so much harder than you think it is every single time. Harder because you don't, you want to do an episode about somebody, but you're kind of like hoping that it's there. What if it's not there? What if the interview is kind of boring? We kind of try to guard against that on the front end by talking to people that have worked on the episodes about who they remember being an engaging subject and worth spending the time on. That's a lot of work, and you got to read through every word. You don't have to, but that's how I like to do it. And then kind of figure, okay, like if this is going to be like a coherent episode that tells a little bit of a story about this wrestler, we have to hit this. It's not just what's the craziest thing they said, though there's a lot of crazy things in these episodes, believe me.
Oh my God.
But it's also sometimes just, all right, this tells us who this person is because they functioned in the episode of the Dark Side episode in a way where they were sort of on the sidelines commenting. They weren't the subject. They weren't the focus. Yet when they sit for the cameras, they get everything. They try to get their whole story. Because who knows what direction they're going to have to end up going when they put the final cut together. So that's where the good stuff is. It's stuff that like would never live in the subject that they sat to talk about, but were interesting asides on things that, really had consequence.
So flip to this season coming up. So when did the discussion first come up to add video into the mix?
There's always talk about it. It's just a question of logistics. So even last season they were talking about it because they liked the concept a lot. And they were like, can this be like a show, with a video show? It's like, well, maybe, but we're sort of like, it's kind of late, but this time the Ducks got in a row and I guess Vice did the right thing. Right, boss?
Oh, well, listen, Vice knows. Vice understands. Vice respects the truth and the ring as they do. But yeah, like, I mean, at the very end of the last season, they were like, yeah, everyone's saying, why isn't this on camera? And it's like, well, because no one said put this on camera. Shouldn't do it. And so, as this stuff happens, I mean, it's like any kind of TV thing or whatever. It's like, once the season's over, it's like, then it's a dead subject for about a year. And then you get until it's like, almost too close.
Yes.
to get it done and then say, hey, yeah, you know, like, oh yeah, we're going to do it on camera this year. Oh, okay.
Yeah, we're just nodding along.
Oh, we're doing it again. Great. Okay, great. Wasn't sure that was happening. But, you know, but it's great. I mean, it's a lot of fun. It certainly adds way more pressure on Jack than me. Because he's the one who does all the crazy amount of reading, like he said. I mean, I can't even imagine the amount of how long these transcripts are and stuff. So it's really it's an amazing thing to put together, and he always finds great clips. Like he finds these absolutely money quotes that they're saying, great stories, and again, they really do shed a light on who these people are, and in a different way, because they're stories that you don't hear about. They're not ones that we've heard a million times. Some of these are very, very intimate and, you know, either touching or hilarious or dark as shit, you know, like it's wild. It's absolutely wild what we don't know. You know, a lot of these guys are so much in the public eye, especially to a wrestling fan, that, you know, you think you know everything about them, but like, there's so much more and stuff that, like I said, just has never been brought to light. And it's absolutely remarkable to be a part of that.
Yeah. One thing the video brought forward was the expressions, the facial tics. This guy reaches suddenly for a gallon of water. This guy suddenly makes a face like off camera. Like, are these guys really asking me this? You get a whole different tension when you see the raw video, and it's raw. You know, it is. It's not, there's no music under it.
It's not SmackDown.
Very blue brand.
No, but like, you know, one of the things that I found so fascinating is there sometimes, even though their stories have nothing to do with even what they're being interviewed about, even the episode that they're talking about, they want to tell their story. It's like, no. Let me finish my fucking story. I'm going to get out of here.
It's said in as many words by one person.
You'll listen to this. It doesn't matter. I don't care if it had anything to do with anything. You're going to hear my story and then we'll move on. And it's
correct.
Amazing. It's wild.
And they're asking some of these old timers, you know, like, tell us the secrets of the business. And it's like, really? Like, when you ask Abdul the Butcher what it means to Blade, you're going to get a response that is money. It's not going to be, okay, let me show you, duh. Yeah. It's going to be like, no, this is how we handle people that ask questions like this in the 40, 50 years.
And it may be potentially harmful to you asking the question.
They want you to think that at the very least, even if they're not going to do anything about it, they want you to be worried that they might.
So JP, as a star of stage and screen, having appeared in May productions and so on, as Jack says, Zach laughs in the background. Well, I mean, you're going in this. I mean, you were giving credit to Jack, but him being on screen, I mean, did you give him any tips on, again, from the makeup chair through the how to seat and project? And I mean, he must have sat at your learning tree for a while to hopefully be humbled for once.
Well, our relationship goes back 24 years. Yeah. He gets it, because I directed him in a bunch of my student films. Like, there was rarely a student film that I did in college that did not have him in it. So he knows what he's doing. I trusted him, and
that work was put in years ago.
Yeah.
And this is more presenting. I'm not acting, you know, I'm hosting a show. It's different.
Yeah. But it's fun. It's fun being on camera. It's fun. I was lucky, because I got to watch where I was sitting. I had a view at the monitor, so I could see which cameras were being used. You know, three camera, a video podcast shoot, and so I could see which one. If it wasn't on me, you know, I was like, oh great, I can go do something. I can go take a sip of water, take off my jacket, which you'll see.
Yeah, that's quite a moment from what I understand. But I don't, no makeup chair. Okay. Yeah, it's not like that. We're showing up and podcasting.
Yeah. It wasn't much. It was kind of interesting to kind of, you know, cause everyone else who was involved, they're not used to it as much as we are. And I mean, we've been doing, forget the relationship. We've been doing this for over 10 years now. And so we just can come in and just go. We don't need to practice. I mean, there's obviously a different element with the video, us watching the video as well as stuff, but still, it's like, we're, you know, just fucking do it. We'll wing it and we'll see what happens.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, absolutely. And
So you mentioned traveling. Did you travel that? I'm going to guess New Jersey. Did you have to go to New Jersey to film this?
In New York.
New York. Close. Okay.
Yeah.
Okay.
We were in we went to Brooklyn. Went to Brooklyn.
Oh, okay. Film. Got it. And how long were you down there for?
I did three sessions.
Yeah.
So it was like, you know, three full days.
Three full days. Got it. And you know, first class airfare, what your rider looks like, anything like that. I mean, I'm trying to figure out.
No.
I knew you guys back when. I just want to figure out what it's like now and how it's going to be going forward.
No, still guerrilla style. You know, that's how we roll. And no, we'd drive. He'd come down to my house and then we'd drive down in the morning. And you know, that's all we need for a warm up. All right, the two of us just letting us just fucking sit there in a car for 2 hours. Forget it. Lots of stuff's going to come up, and we're going to be primed for any kind
of
report.
That's right.
So as I go through the really quick the list of topics, what were there ones that were your favorites of the episodes that you filmed? Ones that you're like, I can't wait till this goes up.
Well, I have to say, there are a few things more electrifying hosting Lapsed Fan than when I can introduce JP to a character in the business that he was sort of unaware of, whose silver tongue he had yet to be exposed to in the form of, you know, ways with words. And ladies and gentlemen, Kim Wood,
the strength and
conditioning coach from the Bengals, who was the consigliere to Brian Pillman.
Yes.
Friend of Dave's. It comes up. Dave comes up. Listen, Kim Wood lays it down.
This is the true nature
of the business.
He gets it. He understands it. He knows what the fuck is going on. And he just has no fear in yelling it from the mountaintops. All right. This guy is unbelievable. And I had no idea who he was. Never seen him before. Never heard of him. But he was just unbelievable. It was crazy.
That's like 4 hours he talked to them. And, you know, only like probably 2.5 minutes maybe total made the double Pillman episode. And even that stuff was money. But this guy, he's like the rare species of person who understands the savagery mentality of being a football player who gets into wrestling. You'll see a lot of that in the Vader episode that they're doing this year as well. And that's kind of like how we matched it up. Kim Wood is a guy who understands footballers and the football mentality getting into wrestling and how the injuries can compromise a football career. And then you end up in wrestling and the similarities between the personality types. So that's the Vader kind of connection. But he's a guy, he's such a rare species, a guy who dove all the way in, like waist deep into the manipulative ways of how the wrestling business is organized and how you have to kind of wink and nod and hustle your way into being somebody that's worth paying up for. You know, money-free agent. That was why Pillman did all this shit he did at WCW, was to create a bidding war between Vince and Eric, and it worked. And so how do you find somebody who is a student of manipulation, a student of con men, someone who's advising a pro wrestler on how to navigate the wrestling world, yet isn't really a wrestling fan in his own right, to hear him tell it? Like, Kim Wood's got to be the only guy who, like you said, Josh, knows Dave so well and has talked to Dave so deeply about how wrestling works and what it's about and what makes these guys tick, yet never bothered advising anybody else in the business, never tried opening a wrestling office, never was an agent, never went on the road, just was there by virtue of trying to help his friend Brian Pillman, who he knew from football. That's such a great perspective. That's such a great place to sit and stand, because you don't have to soften everything you say so that you don't offend your connects in the wrestling business. And he does not.
And you also don't really get, you don't get completely consumed by it. Like, you can watch it. While he can get waist deep in it, he's still watching it from outside. You know, he's experiencing, he's hearing what he's hearing, but he's not in it. He's not in it to a way where it's going to manipulate him. And he's got an incredible viewpoint on the business and just everything. He's hilarious, absolutely hilarious, and also poignant in his lengthy diatribes. It's really phenomenal.
So this season's topics: Mick Foley, Hell in a Cell, Bloodfire in the original Sheik, Tony Atlas, Too Much Too Soon.
So I'll do, as you go through this, Josh, what I'll do is mention the unheard subject that pairs with this episode. So what you're reading are what the Dark Side episodes are going to be about.
All right. Mick Foley, Hell in a Cell.
And that's Mick Foley talking to them about FMW for the episode they did on that, talking to them about Chris and Tammy with the episode he did, helping contribute commentary and things to that episode. He's talked to them for a number of other episodes as well that we excerpted from.
Blood, Fire, and the original Sheik.
Yes, that being Ed Farhat. And we did Kevin Sullivan for that one because, you know, a huge part of why Kevin Sullivan understood the psychology of wrestling as a kid was because he watched Sheik at Boston Garden and realized how different Sheik could make the environment feel by being so dangerous and such a frontline race to the target killer, the way he worked in that ring. So that's the common kind of a bond there.
Tony Atlas, too much, too soon.
Yes, yes, Tony Atlas. Abdullah the Butcher for that one, because in a lot of ways, Abdullah made Tony Atlas in Georgia Championship when he let him body slam him. And at the time, Tony was masked and the mask came off and they did business. And Tony was a huge babyface as a result of that run-in with Abdullah. And of course, their careers tracked all the way through Puerto Rico when they were both in the same locker room when or the same event when Bruiser Brody was murdered. So you have Abby talking to them about for the Brody episode, which is pretty much the first thing they ever shot at Dark Side of the Ring. So he's really not sure what these guys are about. And that makes for a wonderful environment when he's answering these questions. And then later on, they follow on and do a complete episode about Abby's life and times. And then it's fascinating to see him be in a totally different kind of level of comfort for those clips. You know, he's much more forthcoming, much more warm, yet still the glint in his eye of, you know, hustling and working.
Yeah. Yeah, he's so he's in Maine, and he's been Maine forever.
Tony Atlas, yeah.
Tony is, yeah. So he's done this indie. I do a podcast for Limitless Wrestling, and he's been there a couple times. They don't bring him in that often. When he comes in, it's still people just still love him. His nostalgia act just pops up and then goes away. You know, but he has this whole thing, and you know, he's just he still remained a personality even at a specific level.
He's a great storyteller about the old days. You know, you can talk to him about anything and he'll have a story.
Yep. Becoming Muhammad Hassan.
Oh, yeah. That's going to be one for the ages. We did Nikita Koloff for that one because much like Muhammad Hassan, he had to figure out how to become a foreign menace heel full time, 24 hours a day, 7 days a week, despite he was not being Russian, not speaking Russian. And Muhammad Hassan had to be, you know, the post 9/11 Arab American heel everywhere he went, including on the airplanes and in public, and he had to sort of sign up for that life. And Nikita is the subject of choice. He spoke to them for the Magnum TA episode they did, because, of course, that Best of Seven series, they were definitive opponents for each other. And also for the Road Warriors episode that Dark Side did in season two. Nikita, of course, coming out of that musclehead bouncer football player circuit that the Road Warriors came out of, and Barry Darso and Rick Rude and so many other people from Minneapolis and Robbinsdale.
Which would be part of the bus tour, hopefully.
That's right.
Yeah. Robbinsdale High School. I hope the principal's ready for it.
Unannounced, a bus just pulls up.
Absolutely.
Fans. JP's nickname in high school. Hot stuff, Eddie Gilbert.
Ah, brother. That's concerning.
Damn right.
So, Eddie Gilbert has mentioned for that one, we did Lanny Poffo, who they spoke to for the very first ever Dark Side episode to air, which was about Randy Savage and Elizabeth's troubled relationship.
Yes. Yep.
And he spoke to them at length about just growing up Savage and the family and all the dynamics that and just, you know, speaking on behalf of himself as a brother who kind of had his dreams deferred as Randy took off and ended up being the surviving brother, and how that changed his perspective on things like Randy being in the Hall of Fame and stuff like that. So it's about the brother left behind who was like played second fiddle to the superstar brother in a wrestling family. The Gilberts, their father wrestled. And of course, Randy and Lanny's father wrestled as well. Ran territory.
I remember watching Doug in the USWA satellite dish, and was able to get, you know, middle of the night stuff from America One or something like that. And I was just like, he's okay, you know, but it wasn't like when you start to learn about Eddie, it's just like, oh, okay. You kind of get it. Yes. Yeah. That's a hard cross to bear, so to speak. Big Van Vader.
Yeah, that's the Kim Wood episode because, you know, Vader made that transition. LA Rams, he was on his way in football. An injury forced him to pivot. And the mentality is much the same. You know, football players, wrestlers, they're accustomed to being the big deal in any room they walk into. Mm-hmm. And that a lot of ways translates into a certain chip on their shoulder that makes for a unique beast in the wrestling business. Not somebody who came up learning how to be a pro wrestler, but someone who thought they were going to be a pro athlete, pro football player.
Right.
And the mentality that brings. So yeah, Kim Wood, not much more needs to be said. Trust us.
The Scream Queen, Daphne.
Yeah, for that one, we which is going to be a really sad one, of course, we went with Missy Hyatt, who spoke to them about her, right. She actually played a I didn't even know this till the Buff Bagwell episode they did where she sat for the interview. She played a pretty big role in like guiding Buff's career because they were both in Georgia at the time, living, I think, in the same apartment complex. Mm. And she realized he was on his way as a wrestler. I think he was working as the Handsome Stranger in Global Championship where Eddie Gilbert was booking at the time her ex-husband. And she's got great perspective on being a woman in the business who didn't ever train for the ring like Daphne didn't. You know, she got into the business to be a valet. And all of a sudden it's like, it's incredible scenes when she's catfighting with Sunshine and Dark Journey in Dallas and in Mid-South. And all of a sudden she's taking real bumps and real bruises. And it's like, she didn't quite sign up for this, but she just falls into the business. Like to the point that's her defining characteristic. She is still of the business and follows the business very closely, but she had a really unique path. It's the sort of like, you know, the 900 line host and the gossip queen of wrestling, the kiss and tell queen of wrestling. Her first book, you know, or her only book is just a catalog of like these guys she dated and who prematurely came in their pants and stuff like that. She doesn't talk about that exactly on the episode, but it's interesting to check in with Missy looking back on a life in wrestling that was unique, you know, pre-Sunny, pre-centerfold kind of idea.
The original superstar, Billy Graham.
Yeah, that'll be the Dark Side episode, and we paired that with Buff. Buff is, I mean, that Dark Side episode was amazing, but to realize, like, the things he went through coming up, he was filthy rich as a kid. He was, like, the picture of, you could see him in one of those, like, late 90s American Pie, Can't Hardly Wait style movies, you know? Yeah. All the looks, but all the insecurities, too. And plenty of guns. Plenty of guns.
The ammunition is terrifying.
Ammunition is terrifying. Yes, it is. Because they were ready for the Russians to show up anytime at the Bagwell house at any time in the 80s. Yep. And as time went, you know, he kind of is like a cautionary tale like Billy Graham and that like just like complete obsession with the physique. And it becomes your meal ticket in wrestling, but it also becomes your downfall when, you know, you're perceived as, first of all, in Buff's case, you know, really being there first and foremost because he had the body. So he's got to prove so much more. Because people think he's just there for his looks, which, you know, of course, that's what got him his break. But he persevered. He went through the neck injury and stuff and ended up kind of like Billy Graham, where it's like, you know, this former Adonis, like you hear about the failed calf implant and some of the other vanity things he did, you know, trying to maintain that image. But gigolo, you know, he was a gigolo for a time. So there's a lot of stuff Buff said that I think says a lot about him in the wrestling business that didn't make the cut of that episode. So that's what we'll be doing there.
This is a name that a lot of our era fans will remember, and some might not. Ludwig Borga, the Hellraiser from Helsinki.
Oh, my God.
Tell him about it, boss.
Oh, well, I mean, listen. You mean the first coming of Brock Lesnar? Is that what you mean? Is that what he I mean, just it's funny how there's someone like him who really was just a raindrop in the history of the business. But for somebody who was watching, who was just beginning to watch, like myself, in the early 90s, he was huge. Like it's crazy to think that this is a guy like Ludwig Borga was like there for six months.
Yeah.
Cause
he created such an impact.
Because, you know, I can remember a promo that he did SummerSlam 93. He's walking around the completely destroyed buildings of Detroit. And he says, "You call this land of opportunity?" And he's just pointing at these crumbling buildings. And it's just like, yes, I guess I do. I guess this is, opportunity to rebuild there.
So as he's saying, like, because the run was so short, it was kind of tough to find like a subject that matched him, you know. Mm-hmm. It's like, because he didn't really, it's not like anybody else told Ludwig Borga stories on some other Dark Side episode. Why would you bring him up, right? So we went with Bret Hart, sat for the dark, of course, the Montreal Screwjob Dark Side episode, but also sat for a series of other things, including the episode they did on Adrian Adonis, which gives you a really nice snapshot of that 85 rock and wrestling taking off, heady days when everyone's making money hand over fist and are bigger rock stars than they ever thought they would be. So Bret's got some cool stories. I mean, Bret's talked so much over the years and so eloquently, and he's got that massive book. So it's not so much a things you've never heard him say as much, although I think I can bank on a couple of things he says that haven't been out there, which we, you know, had to look long and hard for. But yeah, Brett's just a fascinating character. And look, he was the world champion of the company at the time Borg came in. He was the guy. And right, boss, we're talking about Lex, Brett, late 90s. It was
right.
About,
I mean, this
Borga.
Is it. Like, you know, Borga was that the new foreign menace. You know, after between SummerSlam and the Royal Rumble, you know, it was the Borga feud for Luger. And they were the last two in the Survivor Series main event, you know, with Luger hitting him with the forearm and then getting the pin and then Santa Claus coming out and it all being weird because I guess Santa Claus and wrestling are in the same boat of being real. And, you know, I don't know. This is probably one. I mean, Jack would understand this. I don't know how much you know about this particular guy, but he very much resembles a wrestler that we've covered on our spinoff show Under the Cinemat, Norbert Grupa.
Yes.
German wrestler and boxer who he was in Ghostbusters 2. He played the villain in Ghostbusters 2.
Okay.
And so he was a
wrestler. That guy was a pro wrestler. That's one of the things we do on our Under the Cinemat show is find these wrestling connections you never knew about big movies.
And he was a nut job. And I was like, when I watched I looked at some of the Borger stuff. I was like, wow, this guy, like, they're very, very similar and equally horrifying, though Norbert didn't run for office. And thankfully he didn't.
And as we know, the big storyline in 94 WWF was this referendum. Will it be Brett or will it be Lex? This Hyde Royal Rumble outcome, Brett ultimately getting the nod at WrestleMania. And it was the Ludwig Borga feud that was kind of the referendum on whether Lex was going to feel like the undisputed babyface. We need to put the strap on. Is he Hogan against a foreign menace? And he wasn't. And so in a lot of ways, Ludwig Borga was the litmus test that led them to go with Brett.
This thing, I was just looking at Cage Match. I did not realize Ludwig Borga worked in New Japan Pro Wrestling.
Yes, he did.
And his tag team partner for the longest time, beautiful Bobby Eaton.
Gee, that's a beautiful tag team.
What?
Hellraising Beauty. That was their name. Hellraising Beauty.
Unbelievable. Unbelievable. Yeah, Ludwig Borga. And then finally, round the bend with Truth Lies and Billy Jack Haynes.
Oh, yeah, that's going to be quite an episode. This one is tough because, you know, this guy stands accused, of course, of murdering his wife. So it's not like there's much in the way of murderers in the Dark Side Archives. But as far as like being quick to violence and like being kind of having that spark in his eye, we went with Scorpio. Scorpio has talked to them about collision in Korea.
Too Cold Scorpio.
That's right. Yeah. Too Cold Scorpio, Flash Funk.
Yeah.
He's talked to them about collision in Korea where he had the fight with Hawk and it got serious. He tells a story. Yep. The Buff Bagwell episode, of course, they were tag team champions in WCW where they almost came to blows and just living a life of just staying high and staying ready to fight in the wrestling business. And, you know, Scorpio, unfortunately, is also in a legal quagmire right now, having been involved in a stabbing at a gas station in Missouri. So, you know, sometimes that happens with wrestlers. You kind of like lose track of them and all the next thing you hear, they're on TMZ.
I know. So sad.
Well, I think this series is perfect for you guys. So many different ways. It gets scratches the itches of your interest levels, deep dives, and the fact that you get to mooch off existing IP. I think it's perfect.
Hell yeah.
For you guys. No, this is actually just...
We say all the time, like, if you want to put the archives to the best possible use, WWE, they're doing the vault stuff, you know who to call. I mean, for 10 years... We've established how much can be brought to life.
24 years we've talked about
absolutely
how we like would want access. Like, just let us
the keys.
All right.
Of the let vault. Us decide how it's arranged, when it's made available, in what form and factor, what stuff sits in that vault that needs to come out. You know who to call. It's very simple. It's very simple. So leveraging existing IP, not a problem around here. Not a problem.
All right, final question. I was thinking about this today. So obviously you guys look back at just so much retro stuff, this series, Dark Side, looking back at the past. And there are so many different podcasts that have done that. Yours is obviously the most successful, if not one of the most successful out there. I think that there's an audience out there. I think one of the reasons, one is the humor you bring to it, but two is that some people like to look back because the current day is so processed, and I think the dialogue around it is exhausting, especially if you spend any time on social media. It is grifters galore. It is people that have nuanced takes that just get blown out because it's loud on either side. You have to pick sides. You have to do all this. And it's just not really kind of fun to be in. Whereas you go back, you can spend time with things that you remember. You're nostalgic about. You can laugh at it. You can enjoy it. You can titillated, a word that Jack has used before. These deep dives, but you can laugh at things. You can go back and be like, oh wow, you can be horrified at things as well. Yeah. I don't know if there's really a question here, but I guess some of your success, would you say, is because of the fact that the present is so awful, the past is more worth looking back at. I guess I don't know.
Yeah, because these things that live in wrestling's past aren't chiefly characterized by the dialogue around them. They're not characterized by takes. You can revisit them and not be completely held hostage by the fact that this became this lightning rod of social media debate. It'd be really hard for us to do stuff from, and we've done it a couple of times at fan requests, stuff from, you know, the modern era. And you find that like people just aren't ready to watch it with open eyes. Like they're ready to watch with open eyes stuff that happened in the 80s and 90s.
I mean, they're not ready to watch, you know, listen along with some of our live calls when we do the live calls of current shows. I mean, I'm very opinionated. I'm very opinionated and I don't mind saying it. And, you know, I constantly get flack for having my opinions. People are,
whereas you don't get that kind of flack talking about the old days, to your point, right, Josh?
You know, like people, I mean, I don't care, but it's always funny to me that it's like, well, wait a minute. So I can't feel this way because everyone else feels this way. It feels
you can't feel that way because when you feel that way, they put you in a camp that you know nothing about,
right,
and a category, right, that you know nothing about that exists, yeah, out there. Right. And all of a sudden you're in this room being counted along with all these other people that have a perspective of, you know, tilting towards the negative or tilting towards the positive, whatever the case may be. And you're sharing company with these people that you don't even know what they think, but you're being put in that box. That doesn't happen in the past shows. And,
right,
and it is. It's gross. But at the same time, you have to wonder, if that wasn't there, would anybody even watch wrestling? You know, cause it's,
oh yeah,
the ghost has been given up so thoroughly. Like, why would you watch it if not to get motivated to fight with people about it? I mean, there are moments of, you know, pure joy and water cooler, whatever, where, you know, people in your life are bringing up the Cena heel turn and stuff, but that doesn't explain following it 52 weeks a year.
Right,
like,
right,
you follow it 52 weeks a year because you want to fight about it. Like, or at the very least, when something exciting happens, you receive it not as just something that's objectively exciting. You receive it as a shot across the bow at people who doubted the wrestler who just got the crowd up. You know?
Right.
That's what you're in it for, is the I told you so. And that's a poisonous mentality, the I told you so thing. You got to play by those rules in the modern society. You have to. But it's a damn shame because... Oh. Before I had a way to let everyone know I told you so on this fucking phone, there's a lot more harmony, you know, lot more harmony.
I mean, I've said this, I'll say it here. I don't mind saying it. The social media, the internet has given everybody a voice, and not everybody deserves to have a voice.
Mm-hmm. And it doesn't give people, we learned this, and it doesn't give people the opportunity to make mistakes, you know, or to change their mind as easily because they've planted a flag, you know, they've decided this guy's an asshole. And then like, if years pass, it's like, they're definitely not an asshole, dude. It's like, yeah, but I can't say he's not an asshole anymore. Whereas before, when you didn't have this sort of signposted email or the signposted tweet with date and timestamp, you know, you didn't have to constantly defend a position that you just took, you know, one day because you felt like posting something, you know, that's the problem right there. That's the problem. It's not going away. Yep. You know, we're not here proposing solutions. We're just here pointing out the state of things as they are.
Yeah. I mean, but if you guys think you're not going to get flack for talking about the original Sheik in 2025, yeah, another thing coming. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
Such a flashpoint.
Yeah. Literally, as he throws fire in people's face. Right. But it's true. It's just people are a little bit more, the people who care to hear that kind of conversation tend to be people, not exclusively, but tend to be people who understand that not everything is a sport fight. Not everything is like a rhetorical joust. You know, it's like, right, we're just noticing things. That's all we got to do as a people. Just notice things.
Mm-hmm.
And listen, that's a key thing that we're missing in this society. The ability to listen. We like to talk and talk. Oh, yeah. Talk.
Where you can listen to these guys coming up on the Dark Side of the Ring Unheard podcast, of course. So we're recording this on St. Patrick's Day, and this will be out on the day after. So Tuesday, as you're listening to this. When does the first episode drop? Is it Wednesday the 19th? Or
no, it'll be this Wednesday because it comes out the Wednesday before the Tuesday premiere.
So Wednesday the 19th, is there a release time, or is it just during the day, or what?
At some point during the day. I'm not positive on time, but you'll find it. You'll see it.
All right. So it'll be out on wherever you can get your podcast. You can also get it on YouTube, I assume.
Yes, you'll be able to get it on YouTube. And yeah, of course, you can still get it as an audio pod as well, if that's your preference, like it is mine.
All right. And how long are these episodes?
About an hour.
Yeah, hour and 15 tops. Not
short,
not
work. Short work for you guys.
Yeah. I know. That's kind of that's like, wow. All right. We can get this done. We can get this done pretty fast. 10 whole hours? That's like one of our shows.
You know how much gigabytes that is a video? Like, no wonder we don't do video. It's an absurd suggestion in the first place.
It's also, you know, it adds a whole different element of being presentational. Like when we're doing our show, I can just sit back and kick my feet up on the desk. It doesn't matter what I'm doing. Like,
right.
You know, visually, this is like, I gotta
when I see video pods, especially like the highly produced ones, it seems like these people are putting in an awful lot of work to appear relaxed.
That's very true. You have to think of where you're sitting. This one is in video, but I've been in a couple, and it's like there's three guests, and I have to like frame myself. I'm always thinking about where I am, and it's a lot of work.
And it doesn't sound conducive to a good discussion, does it?
No, it does not. It is not. What's next on the Laps fan? You're going to continue the Coliseum video series. The last episode, as we're talking, is up on March 7th, at least the public feed. What's coming up next for Laps fans, listeners?
We've reached a cadence where we're just pulling shows out of our ass. Like JP, tell them about the podcast.
Well, what's kind of funny about right now, when this drops, we'll be done. Hopefully we're done recording, World War III 1996, which is kind of funny because last year, you know, we were just kind of like pulling them out of the hat, and then Sid died, and it was like, oh well, shit. And so we ended up doing months and months on Sid, and so we kept having this show on the back burner. Like, listeners knew about this. Like, listeners have been waiting for this since.
They remember us mentioning that's next.
Like, September of last year, all right? And so just for one thing after another, and it's like, well, Rumble, and then it's like, oh, well, maybe we should do a Rumble show for the Rumble, and da da da. And so we just haven't been able to do it. And so now it's finally happening, and we get World War III 1996 finally on the table. And for those on Patreon, if you're interested, under the Cinemat, we'll be concluding. We did a four-episode tribute to David Lynch, which we ended up doing Twin Peaks, because Twin Peaks has a number of, not necessarily in the show, but Twin Peaks inspired a couple different wrestling moments and things and whatever. So we did the first season of Twin Peaks over four episodes, and we'll be wrapping that up this week.
Fans may remember the Fandango and Tyler Breeze skits that they did. Over several weeks on Raw that called upon Twin Peaks. So that's what's kind of great about Under the Cinemat, is it helps you kind of realize, like, if you're just a wrestling fan like I am, like JP's like, he loves movies as much as I love wrestling, but we both love both, but it's like inverse order. And so by picking movies that have wrestlers contributing to them, or that are about wrestlers, or have wrestlers somewhere buried in the cast, it's a great way to access points of discussion we never would on the main feed, where we're just basing it on, you know, events. Wrestling events
and discovering wrestlers that some never even heard of before. Like that's kind of the fun of it, is figuring out who these people are, because there's some wrestlers that we've had to piece together their whole history, because it's just not out there. Like it's in different pieces and newspapers and such like that, but it's not, no one has like an actual biography of these individuals. So it's a lot of fun because it's people we'd never talk about, because we didn't even
know.
And
it's people, like, people want the movie so bad to qualify. Right. Like certain movies that they love, they want a wrestling connection, but they do a lot of work sometimes for us trying to find these connections because they just want that box to be checked. And, you know, there are movies that we thought we could never get under the Cinemat, like Friends of Eddie Coyle and It's a Wonderful Life. There are wrestlers in those movies. It just takes a lot of digging to find them.
There are. Wow. I mean, even like little blink and you'll miss it moments, like that counts.
Tell them what qualifies Independence Day with Will Smith.
Well, Independence Day features former WWE announcer Joe Fowler
for 2 seconds.
Wow!
Like literally a blink and you'll miss it moment, because there's a camera doing a dolly move, and it's getting like a number of reporters. And if you pause it at the right moment, there he is, right there, and he's got a line, and he's credited in the movie. He probably filmed a lot more than what ended up making the cut, but he's there, qualified. We dove hard in Independence Day.
We just did a whole series on James Bond, every Bond movie that qualifies.
Yep.
And we
yep.
found out about a UK grappler who was a contemporary of Bert Asserati in the 60s. Yes. And we found him and we interviewed him. He's yep. chilling in the UK. Yep. He was thrilled to talk about his career.
Yep. Wow.
No one ever talks about him as a wrestler.
Yeah, this guy, he had a career in the late 60s, early 70s. Funny enough, he started out doing professional wrestling and then ended up doing amateur wrestling after that, kind of the inverse of most American.
Yeah, Tony Van Silva is his name.
Tony Van Silva. He's a stuntman and a nicest guy, really great guy. And, you know, he was a stunt guy on Skyfall. And so I was like, well, I was looking him up. I was like, well, there's nothing about this guy. Like, there's so little out there. There's so little in newspapers. And I just saw that, you know, he's one of those guys who left his email wide open on IMDb. And I was like, well, you know, let's see if he's going to answer my call. And he did. And took a little while to get a hold of him, but we finally did. And he was amazing. Just an amazing guy and nice as hell. And it was a lot of fun. And so again, it's like, it's cool. Not what I intended, not what I intended at all.
Yes.
When we started this side project, it just the idea of discovering and rediscovering wrestlers who we've lost for whatever reason. Like they didn't break the mainstream. They didn't get, you know, hit crazy attention. They just lived in their little bubble. This guy never went outside of his little tiny territory in the UK. Like he just stayed in that one part. Never did TV. Never did did stuff in like London or any of the other big UK territories. Just was in his little place. Did it for 6 years. Got paid. Made money, and then moved on. And it's like, damn, this guy fucking rules.
Underreported figures. I'll just leave you with this. This was a great thing that happened this year on the main feed. So we're doing the first Saturday Night's main event from May of 1985.
Yes. Yep.
And at the end, they do a credit roll, which they don't do all the time. And it says creative director Brian Penry. I'd never heard that word before. Or logo designer Brian Penry. So, you know, okay, the guy who designed the Saturday Night's main event logo. I wonder if he's still around. We found him. We brought him on. We interviewed him for 2.5 hours. Wouldn't you know, this is the guy who designed the WWF logo of our childhood. This is the guy who worked hand in glove with Vince from 84 to late 86, I think it was, through the Dick Ebersol arrangements for NBC, through so many, designed the WrestleMania logo. Shout outs to Brian Penry, who couldn't have been a nicer guy going into his life and times in WWF. And a wonderful story that I don't think anyone knows about how the original WWF logo he designed was very similar to the Manulife insurance company logo, and how there's actually legal paper back and forth with Vince about ripping off the logo and changes he had to make to satisfy them, and payoffs Vince had to make to satisfy them.
It's a weird looking logo. Like you'd never really know it was a WWE logo. Like it's basically inverted W's looking like almost like a compass.
Four of them.
Right. Four of them, like, you know, in kind of a cross or of sorts. And it's wild. It's just wild logo like that. You'd think that was approved to be a WWE logo. All right. If you say so, but it's amazing. It's amazing. Yeah. It's a cool story. And he was like Jack said, just the nicest guy.
We don't set out to do it, but it's like, well, this guy's like no one else has really gotten this guy. Like, let's do this.
Yeah. There. And think of how many hundreds and hundreds of people have stories from WWE, and they're all these little things that we don't ever think about, we just take for granted, you know.
The accountants, the assistants, all the people doing mundane corporate work at that company. Those are the interesting people. Those are the
people.
That's
the money.
Stories to tell. You know, they saw it in a different light. They're not carnies. They're not, you know.
Right.
They're not playing an angle. These guys just experienced the carnies at work.
Yeah.
And those are the stories that are just they're untouchable. They're so good.
Do you think that Law and Order will ever make the Cinemat series?
That's tough.
Well, my episode, I can say that my episode will, because I'm in it, and
you can tell the stories.
I've been in the ring twice. I've been in the ring twice, so that counts. That qualifies anything that I've done as cinemat worthy. We actually did them first. We do Scary Movie Season in the fall, September, October, and we actually did a movie that I worked on when I first moved out to L.A. In 2005. I think it was on in 2006 to 2007. I was on this movie, unknown Sandra Bullock movie, Premonition. No one knows it, but it was a it has a hell of a story. Has a hell of a story because so many people and nobody knows this. Like, but people were fired. Like, I witnessed firings. I witnessed three editors, now at the time, two Academy Award winning, one Academy Award nominated editor, three editors who've Oscars, who came on this movie to put it together. Mm-hmm. And it's like, what is this movie? The director's fired. He comes back. It's insane. Like, it was just an insane experience as the first ever like Hollywood studio movie that I ever worked on. And it's like just this bizarre experience.
Unfortunately, we won't have to lean on your limited in-ring experience, boss, to qualify the forthcoming Clark Duke picture Stranglehold.
Oh, absolutely.
Because not only will you be starring, MJF will be starring.
MJF's in it. Kayla Becker is in it.
Braxton and WWE. Yep.
Braxton, right. And former WCW World Heavyweight Champion David Arquette.
Oh, and you're in this movie?
Yes. Yeah. I'll say Clark's a fan. Clark's a fan of the show. I've known that for a while, but he reached out and very kindly offered me opportunity to come down to New Jersey and film a few scenes in this movie. It was a lot of fun and great experience. Great people. Everyone was amazing. MJF is the nicest motherfucker out there. Really nice.
Don't blow up his spot.
I don't want to say that out too much, but just great conversations and it's gonna be wild. I can't wait to see it. And just very grateful for that opportunity because it was like in many ways a dream come true in many ways to be able to do something like that.
Because they did a nude scene.
Yes, I did a nude scene.
Okay.
Yes,
absolutely. I want to confirm that. I was the observer. Thank you.
Yep. I was one of the strippers in the strip club, and I just kind of went around and just was naked for two whole days. No problem.
Oh, nice.
Totally. Yeah.
I like it. I like it. Last question. Mister, were you on the first season of Mr. Robot? Or is this
third season?
Got it. Yeah.
Another little kind of almost, they cut half my scene. I was kind of bummed. They cut half my scene when they aired the episode. I was like, what the fuck? Like, my better stuff was after that moment.
They'll have to do an Unheard.
I know, right? I haven't heard of that. Didn't contact them for the unused footage.
I know.
But did a nice scene with Bobby Cannavale.
Yes. Yeah.
Wild. Just funny. Funny guy. Very funny guy.
That's a good series. That's a really fun series. So
I never cool watched. It's funny. I never watched it. I just watched.
Really?
I just bought my episode on iTunes when it aired. I'm gonna buy my episode. But yeah. I never actually saw the whole thing. But I know I had family who watched and they said it was so great.
People love that show. Yeah.
Yeah. First season is great. Yeah. 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 USA, characters welcome.
That's right. Absolutely.
Characters welcome.
Until they're not.
All right. Well, I think we got everything down. We got the Lapse Fan. We got the Dark Side of the Ring Unheard series. No live show, but could be something coming around SummerSlam. Could be a major bus tour in Minneapolis coming to a.
Jeez, I guess we got to do that now.
A high school, an elementary school, and a town office near you. Maybe a lake.
The town hospital. Office. Huge. Yeah. Town office is going to be very, very important.
And follow on social media. The Lapse Fan on X, Instagram, and YouTube. Where else should people follow you or check you out?
Yeah, that's it right there.
Yeah, that's pretty much it.
Good.
We have a Threads, but it's hard to keep up with all the
things. And the Facebook. That's where you're going to get the latest and greatest. And one of the things that was cool, I'm sure they'll do it again this season, that the Vice folks did, is they snipped little parts of the Unheards and just made little 3-minute videos.
Yeah.
So those circulate really well. There's one we did, Cornette versus Russo, the things Cornette said about Russo that didn't make air, and the things Russo said about Cornette didn't make air. That thing flew around social media. It was great to see.
Funny.
What do you think is the most heard episode of Unheard that you've done? I have the answer.
That one.
Yeah.
That one.
It's crazy. 229,000 views on
Cornette versus Russo. People need it. Need it. When I said not want it, need it.
Absolutely.
What's number two?
Great question. I don't know. It should. I mean, the thing is, the YouTube numbers don't necessarily tell you, you know, right. Spotify and Apple podcast plays, which can be a swing factor. It wouldn't surprise me if it was Jake Roberts or the Scott Hall one was well circulated. The Terry Funk one, I remember, was was Funk a surprise as far as how much it seemed to get passed around and shared. But, well, you know, you got to include.
Go ahead. No, go ahead.
I would say you got to include the Instagram numbers. That gives you a different skew on, like, it doesn't mean everyone, of course, you don't watch the whole show on Instagram, but does that count as a view? You know the game.
I'll tell you that you don't hear this often, but you're incorrect. New Jack
is number two.
Yeah.
Makes sense.
39,000 views.
I remember everyone being into that. I remember getting a lot of, I remember my phone blowing up when they dropped a video of that in a different way than, you know, you can tell. You know when something, you know, just, I'm getting all these alerts that people are commenting on. I was like, okay, I got to
shut these off.
Got to shut these off because it's killing me. Mm. But it's wild. Yeah, it's wild, the ones that people are into.
Well, good stuff. You also can check these out on video or their voices or anything in between, whatever that means. Jack Encarnacio and JP Sarr. I finally get it right after almost an hour and a half. All these years later, Jack was the first guest on my show, and I get his fucking name wrong on this. You believe it? It's just unbelievable.
Hey, it's fine. That means it's perfectly fine.
Yeah.
Yes.
That's all it means.
The nerves hit. All right, guys. Appreciate the time. This has been great, and looking forward to checking you out on Dark Side of the Ring Unheard coming up in just a couple days. Guys, thanks so much.
Thank you, guys.